So I want to talk to you all today about compassion. To better understand compassion, it was helpful for me to understand the differences between sympathy, empathy, and compassion. Sympathy is when we see another person suffering and we pity them for it. Empathy is when we feel what another person is feeling when they're suffering. Compassion is when we see another person suffering, share what they're feeling with them, and then take action to alleviate their suffering. The Dalai Lama once said, "If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion." Compassionate people know what it's like to experience pain and suffering themselves. And those experiences allow them to empathize and show compassion. Compassionate people are outwardly focused in the sense that they have the ability to feel others' feelings and connect with others at the heart level. And it turns out there's science behind why we feel compassion toward people who have been in our same boat. Researchers found that humans' sense of compassion increases when there's a common connection with the other person. What these results suggest is that the compassion we feel for others is not solely a function of what befalls them. If our minds draw an association between ourselves and others, even a small one, the compassion we feel is amplified. Some of you know that I'm a person in long-term recovery, and I do much of my work at the Alano Club East. That's a place where people go that are broken and that are trying to get there to restore their lives. And there we practice the 12 steps, we attend meetings, and the most important thing we do is we fellowship and lift people's spirits, and we encourage and help people to heal that need healing. And some of you in this room know what I'm talking about personally from your own lives. And you've experienced that miracle. I personally experienced that miracle nearly 18 years ago, but it's still fresh in my mind. I'll be back. Okay. The pain that I felt is what brought me to the 12 steps. I was willing to do anything. And I can tell you that I know you all know that I like to talk and that I'm seldom at a loss for words, but I was at a loss for words in the moment that I felt so broken that I didn't know what else to do. And I was able to begin this journey of recovery with a two-word prayer. Help me. It's that simple. Because in that prayer, I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and drugs, that my life was unmanageable, that I'd come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and that I'd made a decision to turn my life and will over to the care of God as I understand God. And that's what's so beautiful about the fellowship, because I can have the God that I understand, and you can have the God that you understand, and we can be here together in love and share that experience. And it doesn't have to be what it says in a book. It doesn't have to be dogma-driven. And I think some of you know about that. That's what kept me away from God. That's what kept me away from church for a very long time, because I didn't care for the dogma. I can tell you, too, that 95% of the people that come into the door at the Alano Club East that are looking for help leave. They don't stay. And most of them end up in jails, institutions, and dead. And that's very unfortunate. So I try and do my part to make sure that when someone comes through that door, and I kind of post up in there. Some of you military or former military people know what I'm talking about. I sort of take a position where my back is to the wall and I can see the door. And I watch people come in. And, you know, they're the people that are walking in with some paper in their hand, looking around like this, okay, and they look broken. They don't necessarily look dirty or downtrodden, but they look spiritually broken. And you know what I'm talking about. And I stand up, shake their hand, and ask them what brings them there today. Now, I know why they're there, but it gives me an opportunity to open them so where they can begin to tell me their story. Now, I already know their story. I don't know the details. I don't even know their name. But I share that brokenness. And I also, I hope, will share the miracle of recovery with them. And I tell them that I, too, came through that door broken. And that there is a way that we can turn their lives around, but they need to surrender to their higher power. And through that process, we can sometimes begin a process of renewal. There are those of us that have this gift and have hung on to this gift. And those of us that have also know that it's only by the grace of God that we're there. We know that it's not by anything we did other than that moment of surrender. So a major component of compassion is giving back, even in the smallest of ways. When we take actions that are caring and loving, we feel more love in return. And when we give this precious gift of self, we become a demonstration of love. Compassion exists when we give our strength, guidance, and wisdom to empower another. We're able to see who we are, expecting nothing in return. When I'm face-to-face with someone who's suffering the pain of addiction, I know that it's important for me to be fully present and really listening so that I can see the divine being that's in front of me right then. It wasn't until I saw the definition of the word compassion did I realize I'd experienced it as a small child. I'm not from Lansing. I'm from back east. I'm from Philadelphia. And I grew up in probably one of the most dysfunctional homes. I don't even think that there's any people like my parents in a textbook anywhere. They were... They made the Bickersons look loving, okay? So when they were together, it was really an unfortunate place to be. Fortunately, most of the time they weren't together. Both of my parents were union organizers, so they already had a chip on their shoulder. They were madder than hell every day. And I guess they needed that as their defense to be effective in what they did. But it's not easy to be a small child and to be underfoot in an environment like that. And I had a caretaker from the time I was born until the time I was five. She was a little black, light-skinned lady, Ella. And spiritually, she was my mother. And she was my nurturer. She was my teacher. And she was my first example of love. And my parents fired her when I was five. And they decided, because they could send me to school full-time back then, that I didn't need a caretaker anymore. So I had to take care of myself at 5 years old. They always treated me like I was an adult. Well, you know, if you're a kid and you're treated like that, where's your model for adulthood? I surely didn't want to be like them. In fact, I once made a serious mistake with my father. He asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. I think I was about 8 years old. And I thought about it for a minute. Now, the right answer for him was, oh, I want to be just like you. But I didn't want to be just like him. He wore a sidearm, a very large weapon, on his thigh. And he had a blackjack in his back pocket. And, you know, he didn't mind using these things. And so when he asked me this question, I said, well, I think I'd like to be a writer or maybe a musician or an artist. And the next thing I knew, I was enrolled in Sonny Jurgensen's football camp. And I went to football training right up until the time I finished high school every summer. And then we had drills all winter long. The only peaceful time I really had was I was on the swim team, and I really liked the water, and you know, later in my life, that became very helpful to me because I was in the Navy for a long time. And I was very comfortable with that. And the other thing that my father demanded was that I qualify as a professional marksman. So he sent me to the National Rifle Association training school in Philadelphia, and each year I was expected to move up another level in competitive shooting, both with pistol and with rifle. So here I am. I'd really rather be an artist, okay, or a musician, and I'm firing weapons and I'm playing football. And I was expected to be very good at both. If I could show you a picture of my father right now, your head would nod. You'd understand why I did what I did, because, you didn't disappoint him. It just wasn't an option. So every year, even though my caretaker was fired, she came all the way from the black neighborhood in Philadelphia on a trolley car. And this is a little black lady. She weighed probably 90 pounds, about this big. And she baked me a birthday cake. And she would bring this cake on the trolley car all the way across the city of Philadelphia. It took her half a day. And present this cake to me on my birthday. And she wanted me to know that it was my birthday because my parents never acknowledged it. And she wanted me to know it was a special day. And right up until her death, so she did that until I was about 12 years old. But the chances are you too have been on the receiving end of compassionate acts in your life. If you think about it, you'll know when they occurred. It's when we slow down and acknowledge those acts of kindness and express gratitude for them that we ourselves become more caring and more loving. So, just a little housekeeping with you right now. We're going to do a meditation, and then we're going to move into our thoughts or prayers. So we're going to do this a little bit differently than we usually do. And so let's get comfortable. Let's bring your attention to your breath. There's nothing you need to do except to experience it. Just notice the rhythm of it. With our breath, spirit is moving in through and out of each of us. Know that we're created in the likeness of our Creator. We're extensions of that energy. Allow our bodies to relax, starting with our feet. Wiggle your toes, flex your ankles, allow any stress to flow up your ankles, through your calves, into your thighs, through your buttocks. Relaxation comes if we let go of anything that is not like love. In our bodies, stress is not like love, so we let it go. Up through our abdomen, through our backs, feel the energy that is here today supporting us in this space, here to gently remind us who we really are. We've begun to notice that there is not really much to let go of, only error. This relaxation wave moves up into the chest, back, the neck, our jowls, and through the top of our heads. A beam of light moving out into this world to heal and to bless our brothers and sisters. And now we're going to begin our visualization. Visualize that you're experiencing a sister or a brother in distress. You're able to see their distress, to feel their pain, and to take action to bring comfort and console them in their suffering. You feel compassion flow through you and into them, knowing that their healing has begun to take place through you as an instrument of love. Let us remember in this moment that we're all connected by this love, and that every thought that we think and every word we say is a prayer. And together we know that our thoughts are prayers.